You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 25th of November 2019 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioAlbion.com. Well, we had a shocking explosion of violence over the weekend in the British city of Birmingham. Not entirely unexpected, of course, because Birmingham is multicultural. I believe it may even be majority non-white now. And this particular violent incident involved machetes and knives and a huge brawl that took place at a cinema in the middle of the city. And judging by the pictures, the people involved were probably under the age of 16. Of course, a lot of this violence, a lot of this knife violence is being carried out by school children. And of course, when you think of school children, you think of white children in a school uniform. But now it's more likely to be black teens that look like they're about 6 foot tall. Because blacks do mature at a much faster rate than white people do, their growth spurt begins before whites. So one of the problems is when you have a multicultural school, is the young white lads will be much smaller and less developed than the Negroes there, which of course puts them at risk of being bullied. But what happened here at this cinema, it was a lot of children were there to see the film Frozen 2, an awful film that gives young girls totally unrealistic ideas about their capabilities, makes them think that they're invincible. And this fight that actually took place, apparently it actually began with two girls fighting one another. Of course, we are quite used to seeing videos online of negresses tearing chunks out of each other's weaves. In fact, there's one particularly memorable fight where there's a load of them that all start on one another outside one of those housing complexes they have over there in America. And at the end of the fight, there is what it looks like all these black snakes on the ground. And it's actually their fake hair that they've torn out from one another's heads. I mean, they glue these weaves to the scalp and they leave this weave compressing the actual hair that they do have for up to 6 months. Man, that must really stink. It looks really bizarre anyway, all these black snakes all over the ground where these weaves have been pulled out. I should imagine this fight here that took place in a cinema, that probably looked fairly similar at the end of it. Let's have a look at the report here. A shocking photograph showing a young gang armed with a machete outside a cinema complex has been circulated on social media after a brawl broke out and police officers were attacked. Now, the picture itself, as I said, it shows these young blacks and browns under the age of 16. And you can see that one of them's got a machete. He's just holding a machete, ready to use it or trying to look big with this machete. And that's been circulated on Twitter, which is, you know, that's really helpful because people can see who these people are, who the people are that are likely to be carrying knives and are likely to be causing trouble. They can identify them, they can report them to the police and say, yes, I know who that person is. He's somebody that causes trouble in my area. I know his name. This is where you'll be able to find him. So you would think that they would put that picture in all the newspapers. But no, they've pixelated out the faces of the offenders. I mean, what is the point in doing that? Are they just trying to protect the identity of these young thugs to make it easier for them to go out and attack people? I mean, do we no longer have wanted posters? Are they now banned? We can't actually show the faces of the suspects. Is it racist now to show the face of somebody that's holding a machete about to cause harm with it? I mean, it amazes me that they've pixelated out the faces. I mean, surely you want to warn the public that these are the people that you need to be avoiding. Of course, they don't want the public to know that it's black and brown people that we should be avoiding if we want to avoid trouble. They want us to think that diversity is a strength. So I think that plays into it. That's one of the reasons why they pixelate out these faces, because then it can be hard to tell whether it's a black, brown face or if it's somebody white even. Pockets of fighting erupted in a 100-strong crowd at Star City Cinema in Birmingham this afternoon after a group of people arrived with machetes. It wasn't just a group of people. It was young, non-white gangs. That's who arrived at the cinema. Apparently, there was another film showing there that it depicts a story about gangs in London. And they've actually banned that from being shown at some cinemas because it was expected that there might be trouble. You know, the people that are actually gang members will lionize this film and go out to see it and get involved in gang warfare at the cinema because they'll come across one of these other gangs that live in a different postcode. As I've mentioned before, this is just tribal warfare. It's the same thing that happens in Africa that now happens in our cities. Several arrests were made and police officers were assaulted as they descended on the scene armed with guard dogs at 5:30 p.m. It has also been alleged that they were carrying tasers. Now, there were some reports of officers being attacked. I'm sure I can remember originally seeing a number of officers that had been harmed in some way, but I'm not able to actually find that today as I was looking up the information on this. Families and young children were at the cinema to see Frozen 2. Again, all black and brown faces. I don't think I can recall seeing one white face there. Pictures from the scene show police cars blocking access to the area as a policeman is seen standing with a guard dog. Shocking footage shows young women appearing to push each other as officers try to get control of the situation. Now, these Negresses, they're just as bad as the Negroes. If you actually look at the crime statistics, white women are not very likely to get involved in criminal activity. The percentage is about 1%. But if you look at the percentage of Negresses that get involved in criminal activity, it's much higher. I can't recall the exact statistic, but it is something like 10 times as much as white people that get involved in crimes. It's just that black females seem more likely to be involved in this. I mean, you would expect them to be more likely anyway, because blacks are just more likely to commit crimes, but their females are even more likely than that for some reason. I'm not sure what crimes it is they get involved in, probably shoplifting. Maybe it is violent crimes, because they do seem to be very, very violent. They're very rough people, all in all, to be honest. Flashing blue lights are also seen as a group of at least 8 officers stands on the pavement outside in front of a large crowd. Now, you would expect there would be a lot of arrests here, wouldn't you? You know, you've got a gangs there, they're disturbing the cinema. The cinema has to be shut down. Everybody has to be evacuated. Some of them have got machetes. Some of them have got knives. They're brawling in the street. But there was actually hardly any arrests at all. I think 5 people got arrested in all. Why didn't they arrest all 100 of them and search them for drugs, for instance, which I'm sure they would have found? I guess that would they would then be accused of being racist, though, because it would all be black and brown people that have been arrested. One witness said that a young boy was crying on the floor with his mother as a number of young people started fighting. Well, this is all just part and parcel of living in a multicultural city, isn't it? You are going to see people fighting. You're going to see people get stabbed. You know, if you're particularly unlucky, you might see somebody get shot or get acid thrown over them. I mean, all these are just the sort of things that you expect to see when you have different races living alongside one another within the same territory. There is going to be friction. There's going to be friction there because they're not going to understand the body language of the other race. They're not going to understand the cultural norms. They're not going to understand the language in some instances. So there's not going to be much of a sense of community. There's not going to be much of a sense of these people are the same as me. There's just going to be a sense of being alienated from everybody, and there's going to be a sense of it being an eat or get eaten world, the law of the jungle. If you don't carry a knife, then you're going to be at risk of somebody else with a knife holding you up and mugging you and or stealing from you or just stabbing you at random, as sometimes happens. See, this is the thing. You move these other races in and it doesn't elevate them. They don't become better people. It's the white people that have to live among them that become worse people, because they have to, just to be able to defend themselves, just to be able to get by. A bystander said the police told everyone to leave the cinema as they held taser guns in their hands and started to bring in the guard dogs. I spoke to a policeman who told me it is unclear whether the kids had weapons, and also stated that when kids fight, they bring their group of friends. Now, that's all it was. It was just a group of friends having a scrap. No, it wasn't. This was gang warfare. Their group of friends are gangs. They belong to gangs. This was two gangs that met up at the cinema and proceeded to have a fight, basically. A senior police chief said today the disorder may be the worst thing the responding officers had seen. So they're obviously covering something up here. If this was the worst thing that the police officers had seen, then it was obviously much worse than the pictures that we've seen of it show. And also, if it was the worst thing that they had seen, how come only five teenagers were arrested? It says five teenagers, including a 13-year-old girl, have been arrested by police after they swooped at around 5:30 p.m. They also seized two machetes and a knife from a nearby roundabout. And why didn't they pick up more than that from the people that were in there? I don't think they searched the people that were at the cinema because they were under the age of 16. I think there's a bit of a cover-up here that's going on. And also, obviously, they're trying to cover up the race of the offenders by pixelating them. But in every picture that you look at, it's black and brown people. And sadly, this is what we've just come to expect from them. This is the sort of thing they do in their own countries, and it's the sort of thing they do over here now. I mean, the use of machetes, that's not a white weapon, is it? A machete. That's a black weapon that they use in Africa. It's becoming more and more prevalent, actually, in Britain, this use of machetes. I found a report from last year. It says machete attacks are taking place every 90 minutes on our streets. Criminals are increasingly picking the jungle blades as their weapons of choice to instill terror in victims and rival gang members. It's not just criminals, is it? It's black criminals are using these machetes. Police forces are dealing with rising numbers of machete-wielding thugs carrying out murders, rapes, robberies and burglaries. Figures uncovered using Freedom of Information requests show that in the last 2 months of 2017, police dealt with 928 crimes involving machetes. This is an average of 15 a day, or one every 90 minutes. And you know what? I bet they don't have any crimes involving machetes in the rural areas where they don't have any Negroes or any non-whites. I guess the non-whites, the Asians, the Pakistanis and the Indians, they're more likely to use acid and throw that over somebody. And the Negroes are more likely to have these machetes that they carry about and use them for maiming people. I mean, there's an instance recently where somebody had had their hand chopped off with a machete, and that actually was an Indian guy or a Pakistani guy who ran a family restaurant. This was one that was supposed to be integrated into our society, one of these wonderful immigrants that come over here and set up businesses and employ people. Well, he chopped an innocent white man's hand off because the white man got involved when this non-white was verbally attacking an old age pensioner in her car. London saw 425 of these attacks, with 99 in Greater Manchester, 77 in the West Midlands, and 29 each in Merseyside and West Yorkshire. And that's all areas that have a large amount of diversity. That's all areas that whites are either now in the minority or they are getting close to being in the minority. These figures represent a dramatic rise from just 3 years before, when the deadly blades were used in only 100 crimes a month over the same period. The machete was originally intended as a tool to cut undergrowth or sugarcane in Latin America and Africa. Critics say they have little legitimate use in the UK, but they are not on a list of banned blades such as butterfly or flick knives. It doesn't matter how many times they, or how many tools the British government ban, these non-whites will always invent new ways to kill one another. That's what they do. They just are extremely violent and crime-prone. Obviously, it's not all of them that get involved in these sorts of activities, but the likelihood of them doing it is magnitudes higher than the likelihood of white people getting involved in this sort of thing. They talk about ways to deal with it, and they say, well, we need to have more money spent on them, we need more youth clubs, we need more youth initiatives, we need to have training in schools and teaching kids not to carry knives and all of this nonsense, and it does absolutely nothing. It doesn't bring down the level of violent crime. The level of violent crime continues to go up, and it goes up in ratio with the numbers of non-whites that you have in an area. If you want to cut violent crime in Britain, then they need to stop immigration of non-whites, and they need to start sending the ones that are here back. I mean, they could just start with the ones that get charged with violent crime and send them back. Eventually, you'd end up getting rid of all the bad eggs, basically, and it would become easier and easier for the police to whittle down all the crime-prone Negroes, and they would get the message that if they want to carry out violent crime, then they're going to have to go back and do it in Africa. And even the threat of that probably won't have that much success, because they don't really have much ability for thinking of what's going to happen in the future when they carry out these crimes. It's often because they're in a passionate state at the time, and they have little thought for the consequences of their actions. They just behave according to the dictates of their emotions, rather than thinking things through and thinking, well, I could get sent to prison for this, or I could be deported for this. That thought doesn't even enter their mind, because that's not going to happen at this particular moment. That's something that's going to happen in the future, and the future is not something they're really capable of thinking of. They just think in the moment. And we know this because they don't have any words for abstract ideas in the African languages. They don't have any words for things like particular times in the future. They have yesterday, today and tomorrow. But that's about it. This is why they've never been any good at farmers, because, you know, they would just look at the seed and think, can you eat it? What's the point in putting it in the ground? Am I going to be able to eat it tomorrow? No. So why plant it? This is why when the blacks take over these farmlands in Zimbabwe and South Africa, no, they just ruin them. I mean, when all the slaves were freed over there in America, the people that actually owned the slaves spent a fortune on buying farms, buying farmland and farm implements and livestock and crops and seed. And they gave all of this for free to these freed slaves because they wanted them to do well, because they looked, in a lot of cases, they looked on them as if they were their own children. And within 50 years, it had all gone to ruin. All the machinery had rusted away. All the livestock had been sold on instead of being used to breed, and the farmland was just all going to waste. If you want to learn more about that, I did a narration a few years back called The Truth About Lynching, and the information is in that. So you can't change these people. All you can do is protect yourself from them, and the way to protect yourself from them is to either segregate from them, don't live around them, or to tell them, yes, well, you've had your fun over here in our country, now it's time for you to go back to your own country, and we'll give you financial incentives to do that. I mean, this doesn't have to be done in a violent way. You could just offer them all £10,000 to go back to your country of origin. £10,000 is a fortune in Africa. A lot of these people, I think, would take the chance to go back with a one-off payment like that and make something of themselves. And the people that have been educated over here, they could take that education back to their own countries and use it for the benefit of their own people. You know, we're not talking about exterminating all the non-whites or anything like that. We're just talking reasonable policies to ensure that our country actually becomes a nice place for the British people to live in again. I mean, the government are supposed to be there to ensure our safety and ensure that we have the facilities there that we need in order to progress and innovate and grow and create things. And they're not doing that. They're just importing foreigners and devoting all their money to trying to improve their lives. The best way to improve the foreigners' lives is to not allow them to come to our country. So they have to learn how to improve their own lives. I want to get into another news story here today as well about a dual citizenship non-white from Sweden who is currently in the news for corruption. Swedish media reports say Iraq's defense minister, who holds dual Iraqi-Swedish citizenship, is suspected of illegally receiving benefits in Sweden. You know, this is an MP. This is an MP in Iraq who has, all the while he's been over there in Iraq as a defense minister, at the same time, he's been ripping off the benefit system in Sweden, claiming benefits for himself, I guess, telling them that he's unemployed while he's actually over there in Iraq as the defense minister. Local media, citing a Swedish defense official, reported that Najjar al-Shammari claimed child and housing support for years, despite living in Baghdad. Al-Shammari and Swedish officials weren't immediately available for comment. And you have to wonder how many others are doing this. How many others are doing this? How many other non-whites just come to our countries in Europe and they get all these benefits, they sign on with all these benefits, and then they just go back to their own country and rent the place out that the housing benefit is paying for. Send some other brown person to go in there and sign on for them every week and get the money for that back in their own country. We know this sort of thing goes on with some of the Eastern Europeans as well. they get their benefits sent back to Romania and Bulgaria and what have you. And the benefit systems that we have, the welfare systems that we have in Europe, they're a huge magnet to these non-whites. But this is the first time I think it's actually been somebody in political office in one of these non-white countries that is doing this. Swedish news agency TT said Friday that Al-Shamari, who assumed his post in June, is registered to live in a Stockholm suburb. Swedish newspaper Expressen reported Saturday he moved to Sweden in 2011, received citizenship in 2015, and was reported to authorities, along with his wife, earlier this month for suspected benefits fraud. I wonder whether he was claiming to be a refugee. I guess he must have been claiming to be a refugee, and then he must have got his citizenship, but he must have been back in Iraq for quite some time to be voted in as the defence minister. He allegedly continued to claim social payments for years after returning to Iraq. It doesn't actually say when he went back to Iraq. He probably, as soon as he got his citizenship, as soon as he got his welfare benefits in 2015, he probably hopped on a flight back over there again. Sweden and its Nordic neighbours are known for providing generous social benefits. Of course, that's why they are the number one destination for these non-whites that claim to be refugees. If they were refugees, they would be claiming asylum in the nearest country to the one that they come from. They wouldn't be trawling all the way across Europe to get to the north of Europe, as far away from their country as possible, before they actually claim the benefit. I mean, these people should be sent back to the country that they've come from. You know, if they're going to claim that they are refugees and they're fleeing war, then it must be a war in the country that they've just left. You know, if they're claiming benefits in Sweden as a refugee, it must be because there's a war in Denmark. There's no war in Denmark. It's like when they come over to Britain and claim to be a refugee. There's no war in France. Under the law, I don't think we'd even need to change the law. We just need to enforce the law and send these people back and say they have no right to be here. They're all fraudulent. Every single one of the non-whites that comes across the channel claiming to be a refugee is a liar and a criminal because there is no war in France. But it gets better with this Naja Al-Shamari. He's also just been exposed in another scandal. Screenshots of messages have been published in a Swedish publication showing alleged sexual advances by Iraqi Defence Minister Naja Al-Shamari to a young Swedish man who repeatedly rejected the invites. Now, this is serious. Homosexuality is obviously illegal in Iraq. So not only is he in trouble for ripping off a housing benefit in Sweden, he's also in trouble in Iraq for being a sodomite. Despite the 20-year-old's rejection, the high-ranking Iraqi politician and former general kept pursuing a sex date with the young man. His text messages were later discovered by his wife, leading to a marriage crisis, the Swedish news site Nyheter Idag reported. Screenshots of Arabic text messages were also published on the site, supposedly highlighting conversations between Al-Shamari and other men, although the quality was too poor to read legibly. The police reports are said to include statements by his wife. "He's cheating. It's very obvious. He doesn't seem to care that I know about his infidelity. He is having sex with other men. I know it," Al-Shamari's wife is quoted as saying. "When I tell him he's treating me wrong, he yells at me and he hits me." This is the sort of people that they're welcoming into Sweden as refugees. Sodomites that beat their wives and rip off the benefit system. I bet they will let him back in there again as well. I bet he will say that he's being persecuted for his homosexuality in Iraq and needs to be let back into Sweden to claim asylum. And of course, he's got this Swedish citizenship, so he can get away with it. The defense minister denies his family's claims of his homosexuality. It's his own family that are saying this. The Swedish website reports that Al-Shamari told police that as an officer in the Iraqi army in 1995, he held a position of great responsibility and that other officers tried to push him aside in order to man the position themselves as to make money from bribes. He claims he was set up in a trap because homosexuality in the Iraqi military is punishable by the death penalty. So he's in a lot of trouble, isn't he, this Al-Shamari? These people that are just the same as us, under the skin, apparently. Quite clearly they're not. This story highlights all sorts of problems, really. It highlights problems of dual nationality. It highlights problems of non-whites coming into white countries and their loyalty not being to the white people that they are with. It highlights the lies that they tell. Apparently this Iraqi defense minister, he's really big on anti-corruption over there in Iraq. And of course, he makes mention of that in this statement to the police, where he says that these people tried to take over his job and they were trying to make money from bribes. And here he is ripping off the welfare system in Sweden, claiming that he's in Sweden unemployed. Well, he's actually in Iraq, propositioning young men. The hypocrisy there as well, that these Muslims will claim that they are against homosexuality, yet they have a massive problem with it in these non-white countries. I think I can remember seeing statistics a while back that Pakistan was the country in the world with the most hits on one of these homosexual websites. And this was produced by Pink News or something like that, one of the gay websites. I mean, it's a part of their culture to allow the buggery of little boys, basically, the bakabazi, I think they call them. The American army were told that they just had to turn a blind eye to it in Afghanistan because it was a part of their culture. I bet we end up seeing this defense minister coming back to Sweden and asking for asylum because the Iraqis want to hang him for his homosexuality. Anyway, of course, this is all very embarrassing for Sweden once again. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow, hopefully with Mr. I. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.